Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
Great beer is about drinkability. Doesn't matter the style.
You guys are like walking beer Wikipedia.
That's the first time that you've ever accepted me as a person.
Or you have a fermentation in your gut.
Yeah. I'm jet-propelled at all times.
How many guys do you think that you have the privilege to slap?
Somebody who's never tasted a commercial example, and this is how you know everything about this beer? Please, you don't.
I think it's bullshit.
I think it's bullshit, too.
Wow. Are you guys going to arm wrestle?
No.
We're going to teabag fight.
Yeah. You heard of Junkyard Wars?
No. Can I get another high five, Beavis?
Now, live from the Brewing Network studios in Northern California, this is the radio program for home brewers, craft brewers, beer lovers, and beer geeks. It's your only source for live beer radio that brings expert brewers together with, well, expert drinkers. This is the radio program with a head on it. This is The Session.
Hey, welcome everybody. It's The Session. We are back here Monday night, sweating it out here in the old home studio of mine. I'm joined by my co-host, Teresa. Teresa, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. It's been a little minute. It definitely has. And we are joined here by Josh and Alan from the Star Spangled Brewing Company in Clarksville, Tennessee. Boys, welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Yep. Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys coming on, man. It's, we got the beer super early. They've been sitting in my fridge and, reading your notes. I'm curious. I'm interested to talk about these. We were talking a little bit about in the pre-show. You guys are trying to I'm going to tease it here. You're trying to start a new style, a subcategory of IPA. We'll get to it maybe, when we start drinking about it. I don't know. Who knows? We'll see. I'm very excited to not only paint a target on your backs for people to make fun of you, but also make fun of you. Yeah. But also make fun of that. You're trying to start a new subcategory of IPA. No, but in all seriousness, I think that's cool, man. And, regional beer styles, that's what keeps breweries going, after market saturation and after, the fad dies down of whatever, having something that people can call their own from where they're from, I think sort of speaks a lot about the beer culture in that area.
Yeah, and it gives ownership too. It gives ownership. Yeah. They can. Well, we'll talk. I don't know where you want to start talking about it at, but it does give ownership of their beers, stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, and this is the.
I don't give too much away.
This is the problem with me, man. Where it's like I have everything planned in my head, and then I start going live, and it's like I'm just a listless in the ocean of interviews. I have no idea what's going on, so I'm sort of trying to not like plan anything. And we're just making it organic, and that's just, that's the way we work, that's the way I work.
Yeah, right basically.
Yeah, here we go. I'm drinking a, Teresa, I'm drinking one of your beers, the All I Want Pilsner.
I noticed. I'm so happy. We ran out of
me
that,
too.
I think, right after you ordered it. So
really?
I can't even get it anymore.
Ugh. Well, I was in the fridge, and I'm like, should I bring a seltzer on just to make fun of you? just to give you a little shit about it.
Did you buy a seltzer?
I did buy a seltzer. I wanted to try it. You keep talking about it.
I know.
And I wanted to try it.
Did you try it yet?
I did try it and I kind of liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of,
I thought
strawberry lemonade. Yeah.
It's a thing now for sure.
Oh man. Yeah. Seltzer is honestly, we can't do enough seltzer. We're going to do a 30 barrel batch this weekend and we're probably going to have another batch like right on the tails of that one.
Yeah.
We keep running out and then people are hooked on it. They come in and they're like, where's my seltzer? They have the like seltzer shakes. They're like, come on.
We did a seltzer here in Clarksville and we just did like a base seltzer and, and I wanted a seltzer bar where kind of like a Bloody Mary or margarita bar where you can mix your own flavors in it.
Oh, dude.
So we have,
I was going to do that for beer week.
Yeah, we have a baked seltzer with a, like a little bit of citrus in it, but you can go over to the side and mix all these different flavors into it.
Oh,
and you know
dude.
What the best selling flavor here so far?
What?
What is it?
Pickle juice.
Pickle juice.
Get out of
juice.
Town.
You're kidding me.
Yeah.
Pickle Are juice. People buying that at like the end of the evening to try to like punk their buddy or something? Or
no, I don't know. I mean, we just got the 5 gallon jar to begin with, or the big, well, it looks like 5 gallon, probably 1 gallon thing of pickles and poured it into a thing. And it, man, it's
oh my fine. God.
Well, and I don't know who needs, you know, psychiatric help more, like the people who buy it or you guys who came up with the idea to give it. Well, look, we're just offering it to the people. I mean, if they choose to purchase it, then they can purchase it, and then it's on them.
Yeah. I mean, here at the ballparks, too, like if you have, you know, kids that play ball or whatever, they actually will freeze the pickle juice into popsicles,
God.
And the kids cannot. I mean, they sump like a quarter of them, but the kids are all running around the parks with popsicle, it's a thing now.
I don't know
you guys
that
definitely
it
do have a different culture.
Is that like a recent thing or is it just a Southern like we love pickle
it might
juice?
It's just a Southern thing. You know, I'm originally from Ohio and I got down to Tennessee in 06 and you just find this stuff out, man.
Wow. Alan, is that true? Are you from the South, Alan?
Yeah, I was born and raised in Georgia and I got to say, man, it was always pickles. You know, we always had, you know.
It was always pickles, man.
I think maybe because we always had gardens and, like, cucumbers are easy to grow.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
Your mom, your grandma, they always can the food and, you know, put it up for in case there's a bad winter, which, you know, in Georgia, a bad winter is like you get a dusting of snow.
You know? Okay, right.
Pickle the cucumbers, man. So you always have them, and I guess we just kind of grew to love them. I don't know.
Yeah, and you go. You better drink this pickle juice because we're not wasting anything, or you're in trouble, and you got into more than two fights in a week at school. So now you got to drink this pickle juice, and then everyone just loves it now. To own everybody. Well,
yeah, I had
anyway,
to look up where you guys are because. I was wondering if you were close to the Appalachians, but you're not. You're way on the western side of the state, huh?
Yeah.
Because that would make Nashville. How much?
Just west of Nashville,
oh, just
like
west.
25 miles.
Yeah. Okay, nice. Nice, man. That's cool. All right, well, Josh, you're the owner, so let's start with you, man. How did you come to open Star Spangled Brewing and find yourself in Clarksville?
Yeah, well, I found myself in Clarksville. The military brought me here. I moved here in 06, was in Special Forces as a Green Beret here from 06 until 19.
Oh, damn.
So nice. When I wanted to retire and looking for a retirement gig and, you know, I was home brewing at the time and I was brewing Winchester and the Struggle Bus and doing like little craft beer shows with my homebrew setup. And just kind of really meshed from there on. And, you know, I didn't really consider Special Forces a job because I loved it. And if I figured that if I was fortunate enough to be able to do something else I love the rest of my life, brew beer, I'd never have to work a day in my life.
Yeah.
You know,
how's that going?
Yeah, it's going good. It's going. I can't say like, oh, today sucks, man, because you know, I'm doing it to myself, you know, so.
Well, yeah, I feel like that's military training. Because in everybody, in any other everyday society, everyone's like, God, I hate this. I have to do this thing. This sucks. But the aspect of, well, I'm doing it to myself. So if I didn't like it, I would stop doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like all of a sudden cleaning bathrooms and scrubbing toilets isn't an issue with me anymore. You know, I'll just do it.
You're not
it's
getting,
mine.
Yeah. Well, you know? And you're not getting shot at. And I think
that's a plus. That's a plus. Yeah.
Special Forces Green Beret. Wow, damn, dude. And then you got to retire out of that, which I feel like is an achievement in and of itself. And then so you loved homebrewing so much, you decided to just open a brewery. Did you intern at a brewery and like work a little bit and
no,
see
no,
how
it
is?
No, just homebrew. And, you know, But you just do as much as you can, homebrew and learn as much as you can through, you know, podcasts like yours and things like that. Initially, I had done probably about 2 years before I retired. I you get online, you know, the pro brewer forums and things like that. And like, I wanted to start with the smallest system I could. So it was a 3-barrel system I had in my head that I was going to start with. And you get on the Reddits and pro brewers and stuff like that just to see if it's feasible. And I got on and was like, is a 3-barrel system feasible? Everybody's like, no, you can't never make it work. You'll never make it work. So I kind of got frustrated with that and shelved it for about a year until I came back to it. I was like, you know what? Let me check one more time. There has to be a brewery out there that made it off of a 3-barrel system. And so I get on there again, and there was one or two that were like, no, you can make it work if you work your numbers correctly. Mm-hmm. You know, and coming from a special forces background, planning was a big part of it. Simple planning, but planning, very detailed planning, was part of the everyday operations there.
Sure.
So I decided I was going to do like a very detailed business plan. And if I kept a lot of the work done by myself, that I could totally make it work. So I cashed in, you know, the savings and everything I had, and I bought a Stout Tanks and Kettles electric 3-barrel system with 5 fermenters, and off to the races since then, man.
Wow.
You're still on that 3-barrel.
No, we sold the 3-barrel to a place in Colorado. Now we're doing we have a 10-barrel system and 20-barrel capacity with Stout Tanks and Kettles.
That's a nice little way to sort of jump up, you know, from a 3 to a 10. And I do want to talk a little bit about that, because, you know, I was smiling when you were telling that story, because I'm like, yeah, of course, everyone's telling you no. And that's what we would have said here on this show, too. Like, there's no way. But there is a way, and that's if you do all of the stuff and you're not paying yourself a thing like that nano brewery sort of like syndrome, right? There are a couple of breweries. I know there's one in like Sacramento. I forget the name now. They started with like a 1-barrel system. They're doing fine now, but it was a struggle.
Yeah. And, you know, let's be honest. I have a military retirement, so I don't pay myself, you know, and I think that's a big key to it also. You have to have some sort of other income while you're building out. Like, I started building a brewery out probably a year now, I'd say probably 8 months before I retired. Mm-hmm. So I still had that residual income until I got out. And then when I got out, it was just, the ball was already rolling.
Okay. So you're treating it like, I don't know. I think pet project is sort of, it's not really complimentary, I think, but like it's you're letting the brewery run itself. You're not drawing from the brewery because you want that to sort of thrive. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. You know, and you have to roll everything back into it. And I felt like if I was going to take a paycheck from it at that time, that it just would have, you know, you would have to skimp somewhere else, whether it be on grain or, you know, or something like that, yeast. And you don't want to do that. You need to go all in. If you're going to start a brewery.
Do you think that you could have made it off that 3-barrel without your military draw?
Yeah, okay. I could have. Now seeing the numbers and things like that, you know, the South was really the last place to catch on to the craft beer craze. When I started the brewery, there was one other one here in Clarksville, and there was just a couple in Nashville. So the target market, when I did my market analysis and planning, I mean, it was prime for craft beer. And plus, I'm right beside Fort Campbell, Kentucky. Which is a rotating group of soldiers every 2 to 4 years that isn't really affected by, you know, COVID or anything like that, because, you know, we still get paychecks during that time. So the target market was great for a craft brewery. Now, you do a lot of education in Clarksville or in the South as far as beer goes, because you know, people they grew up on, you know, big brand pilsners and
pickle juice, and
and they think that, you know, craft beer is really bougie until you'd explain that it's my craft. Now you go to a craft fair and there's people making jewelry, there's people you making stained glass, that's their craft. Now this is my craft, that's the only reason why we call it craft beer. And they're like, I like craft beer now. I'm a craft
You know, that's,
well, once they finally understand enough to taste it and figure out what they like, and it's a fun position to be in, honestly, to be able to teach people.
It is, yeah. Yeah. It takes it. Yeah, because everybody that would listen to me, I would just tell about craft beer, stuff like that. Especially down here, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's really interesting to put it that way, because, you know, here in the Bay Area, you know, any sort of like trend, we automatically adopt the name for, like, oh, okay, well, this is farm to table, or this is craft beer, or this is whatever it is.
Yeah.
Except Black IPA, or no, Cascadian Dark Ale. That will never catch on. It's Black IPA. I don't know. Then that's just the way it is. But I guess I've never really heard the hesitancy of a movement because of like the craft beer name, like the craft beer. I understand it's bougie, but the effort it takes to sort of break that down and say, well, this is why it's craft, and it doesn't mean anything, you know, different than the beer you like already. You like this thing, so. Yeah, I don't know. I've never actually heard it put that way. I think it's pretty cool. That's a good way to do it.
Yeah, we just kind of had to adopt here, you know. And I think when I started the brewery here, there was only 150 breweries in the entire state of Tennessee.
Oh, wow.
God, that's a lot, though, still. That still blows me away, man. Yeah.
I'm from Ohio, and some of the cities, there's 150 right there in that one city, you know. So yeah. The target market was good for it, and we just do a lot of education because of it.
Okay. So when people come in, and are there, you know, let's say, you know, soldiers come in, they're off base or whatever the term is, and they go, what do you have? How do you explain to them? I don't know why I'm picking the military, just because.
Yeah, the military there, right? Doesn't really need them because they're traveled, you know, a lot. So
yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's people that I would say that like we have a really big tobacco farming industry here, and livestock industry and stuff like that. So
yeah, okay.
So it's just educating the people that are local as well to the different beers. So they come in with a specific style of Pilsner that they want, and of course we're going to have something close to it, but brewed by Star Spangled Brewing Company on the board. Like, oh, you would like a Bud Light? Try our Pilsner. You know, this is our craft. You know, your craft is farming. Your craft is, you know, sharecropping, whatever. This is my craft. And they try it and they're like, oh, well, yeah, I'll totally support this. You know, I'm behind this now.
So. I mean, that's cool that you're relating to them on that level, you know, and like I said, it's an interesting approach, and I've never heard about it from that point of view, like sort of turning it around and being like, well, this is what you do and this is the same thing. The drawing those parallels definitely helps people sort of embrace whatever you're talking about. It sort of breaks down those barriers and you kind of just connect, you know.
Yeah You know, they see a lot of the tap rooms and stuff like that when they're traveling or when they're around town, and you know, frankly it's probably pretty intimidating when you go up and you see the descriptions of these lengthy beers with all these taste to it. So we have it on our board, and they can read through it. It's a chalkboard that we write everything down, and we read through it, and you know, it's just plain and simple, pretty straightforward to them.
A lot of hand holding, probably.
No, not really. We have a great set of servers out there that everybody comes in. You know, they get a "Hi y'all, how you doing?"
Yeah,
come on in, take a seat, and you know, we'll explain the beers to you. If you already know what you want, let us know, and we'll bring it right to you.
That's great. Wow, that's cool. So when you decided to open the brewery, how many breweries did you say were around you?
There was 150 in the entire state of Tennessee at the time, 2017.
Okay. And what about in Clarksville?
In Clarksville, there was one, with the second one opened just before me, another small three-barrel brewery.
Wow.
So I was the third in Clarksville. Wow. And we're the fifth largest city in Tennessee.
Jeez.
So it's
plenty of room.
Plenty of room.
Yeah.
Yep. That's the way I see it. So now we have five or six?
Seven
now in Clarksville.
Wow. Yeah. So you had four open in, 4 years. That's one a year.
Yeah. And it's great because for me, craft beer is a tourism. Like if I go visit, you know, if I'm going to California, if I go to West Coast, East Coast, it doesn't matter. I'm not stopping at one brewery. I'm gonna try them all. You know, I'll try a couple beers at all the other ones. So I think it drives business in a way until it becomes saturation.
Yes.
And then it becomes counterproductive.
For sure. It's a very much a tourism bell or whatever, right? Because once you're sort of dialed into the craft scene, anywhere you go, you're automatically finding yourself looking for either a craft bar or a brewery. You know, it's definitely the more breweries there are in your area makes you a little bit more worldly in, you know, finding something to do, throwing your money into a different local economy when you go on vacation.
Yeah, and you want local. You know, you don't want something that you can get at home. You want the beer that comes from that area. And I think that's one of the driving reasons that we came up with the Southern IPA as a subcategory to regular IPAs.
Let's talk about it. Let's talk about it.
Right on,
let's
right
just
on.
Do it right now. Southern IPA.
I got my pen. I'm going to take notes.
I want to learn a bit about it. I'm going to take a break, and then I'm going to go drink it. So I want to learn a little bit about Southern IPA. Why Southern IPA? Tell me.
Yeah.
Convince me.
So basically, we created an IPA that we love. It's great. My background with homebrewing, when I started out, I started entering competitions. Mm-hmm. And everything had to fit a category, you know?
Oh, yeah.
This particular IPA is really outside of several categories, you know? So
how so?
So as far as, say, West Coast, it's way more malty.
Okay.
It's more malty. It's so then if you want to step up to more malty, you've got your English IPA and a red IPA. It's more malty than them. Finishes a bit heavier.
Mm-hmm.
Fully attenuated, but finishes heavier, but not sweet and cloying. You know, it's all about balance. You know, us here in the South, you know, we like our sweet teas, we like our fried foods. You know, we like flavor.
Yeah, for sure, man. Yeah.
If there's going to be malt in it, you got to taste it. You know, it's there for a reason.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
The hops in it. You know, we like our southern. You know, basically our southern fruits. So we kind of cater to that, you know, a lot of, you know, citrus, orange, you know, say like from, you know, Florida's and, maybe some, you know, a very, young peach with the acidicness of, you know,
mm-hmm.
say a peach, big thing down here now seems to be, peach tea, you know, you go to places, you try to get a sweet tea. They want to ask you now, oh, you want peach, you know, well,
oh, really? Not pickles, but peach.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So, so it's, you know, it's basically just outside of several IPA styles, you know, categories. And we're like, man, where do we put this? Like, this is great. I think it, you know, would do great in competition if we had a place to put it.
So you're saying that, and I love doing this, by the way, and normally I'd be drinking and sort of like, you know, following along, but I want to learn about it, the style that you're creating before trying it. So what you're saying is that this beer style is maltier than like, say, an English IPA or, you know, the classic like 90s West Coast IPA. And it's not dank. It's not that weed dank thing, but it's also not new tropical citrus kind of a thing.
So it's a,
right?
So yeah, it's definitely not dank. And it is a heavier beer without really sitting on, you know, you know, a lot of say an Imperial stuff. That's first thing people want to think of when you say a heavy beer.
Yeah.
And it doesn't sit like that, you know.
I hope not. God.
Yeah. it doesn't finish. It attenuates fully out.
Yeah.
But it just, you know, it doesn't attenuate down, say, I'm trying to think of, I guess it would be probably the red IPA would be the highest one, the one with the highest final gravity, probably like a 14 or maybe a 19 even.
Wow.
Ours finishes, you know, a bit above that, but you would never know it drinking, you know, because it's balanced, you know, and that's kind of
you've got enough bitterness to bring the sweetness down,
yes,
but it's
yes.
not overly bitter.
Yeah, there's no question whether it's an IPA. So IPA, of course,
yeah.
you know, it's got to be hop forward. It's got to be bitter. It's got to be hoppy, you know. Well, I say bitter, and I mean we've got our East Coast, you know, our New England's also that are. You know, on the low side of bitter, mm-hmm. but it's nowhere near the East Coast, you know,
good,
you know, the England's it's, you know, it's not hazy, you know,
yep.
clears up on purpose. We, you know, it is a dry hop. So, you know, we first put it out, it'll have a little bit of, you know, the normal dry hop haze to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, sure.
But clears right up. So it's, you know, it's still, you know, it doesn't really change, you know, the flavor.
Yep.
We're not trying to make it hazy. We don't. And by also, and I want to say this too, by us creating the style, you know, sort of, We're not saying, hey, this is the next biggest thing. This is gonna take over the hazies. This is gonna put a stop to whiskey. No, it's all IPA.
I wish it would, though.
Yeah, I know, man. That's exactly what I'm thinking. I'm like, why?
Well, why not? Like, yeah. Come on.
I love them all. I love the hazies. I love the West Coast. I love brutes. I mean, I love the brute IPAs, you know? So
I actually like brute IPAs.
I'm a beer guy, so I like it all.
So you guys are the only ones. You're the ones. You're the ones still waiting for IPA. Oh, yeah. And Teresa. You guys and Teresa are the three left in America going, you know what really should make a comeback is brute IPA.
Oh, yeah.
It's like the polar opposite of what you're talking about.
It is. We love the our brute IPA too. It's pretty good. It's called the Knuckle Duster, and we got
some great names.
Yeah, you know, I got the recipe actually from the CBC in Denver 2 years ago.
Okay,
when they had it down there, I was talking to one of the brewers from LA, and I got the idea from him, and I brought it back here to Clarksville and just tampered and tested and tested and tested till, you know, it's difficult to get it that dry without using, you know, champagne yeast. So yeah, So we figured that out, and it's a good seller here too.
We had on, I think it was the last show, Brendan from Liquid Gravity. He was like, you know, I think brute IPA would have done better if it was marketed as low calorie IPA. And I'm like, you know what? Sure, I think it might be. Yeah.
Dry hop, low calorie.
Dry hop, because automatically you go brute. Okay, well, that's a champagne term. So you're already at a different level of clientele. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like the tobacco farmer isn't going to go, well, I really prefer a, you know, semi-dry champagne to a brute, but it's fine. I mean, maybe I'm like, you know, characters, like people, but it's, I don't know. Anyway, I just like throwing it out there sometimes. Like low calorie might, because there's someone hawking now a low calorie IPA. Who is it? Jesus. It's Warren texted me about it. I think it's New Glarus. I got to find it now. Now it's a low calorie. There's someone out there saying low calorie IPA is like non-ironically.
It's like,
that's annoying.
It really is annoying. It's Bell's. It's Bell's. Low-cal IPA. It's called Lighthearted. I'm going to try to crop Warren's phone number out of there so no one calls him. Oh, it's not on there. Okay, great. Well, whatever.
Yeah. I couldn't see it.
Lighthearted.
Yeah, that's disappointing.
Anyway,
I like the idea of Southern IPA a lot better.
I like the idea of Southern IPA. So what about the malt? So you said it's heavier, but what kind of malts are you putting in there? What's because we're going to define the category. We're going to define the style now. So what malts are typically used for a classic example of the style?
So we like to stay, you know, we're being, you know, us being very patriotic. We try to stay American everything we can.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Now, well, I mean, it's American style, right? The Southern IPA. Right. I mean, you're not going to be using, you know, German malts in that.
Right.
For sure. So, yeah.
So it's, you know, we have some pale ale in there. We do add some things for color, a little, you know, crystals and stuff to get the color up. It's more about, you know, working on the body of the beer. And balancing it with the amount of IBUs, you know, with the amount of hops and the correct yeast, you know.
Sure.
You really gotta. We've played around with several different yeast on this beer.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we've really settled on one now that really works well with the other things we're doing. And it's because the yeast that it does contribute, you know, a bit of. I'd say fruitiness as well to the beer.
Okay, so you're doing a little more estery. What can you tell me what yeast you want to use? And I understand if you don't, but
I'll go as far as English yeast. It's definitely an English derived yeast.
Okay, so you're keeping things a little close, and I appreciate that. I definitely appreciate that.
But and honestly, it's all about balance.
Yeah.
You know, which I think comes back to the South. And with beer, but to the South, like, you know, I mentioned earlier, we like our sweet tea. But we don't like our sweet tea so sweet and cloying that you don't know it's tea, you know?
See, and I've never been to the South really. Actually, I'm trying to think, and I've been to Florida, but who cares? But like, I've had sweet tea out here in California, and it's like I'm a hummingbird just drinking sugar water. It's like, I don't know. Yeah, I don't understand. But I feel like you got to go to the source.
Right.
Yeah. And absolutely. Then it's a little bit different. Okay. All right.
Yeah. The tea has to be balanced like, you know, like your fried chicken. You don't want only the breading on the chicken, you know? It's all got to be, you got to taste the chicken as well, you know?
Sometimes, yeah. But yeah, I see your point, man.
I honestly can't wait to get back there right now. I'm talking about the fried chicken and sweet tea.
I tell you, the pickles, yeah. I'm so disappointed. Oh, because
the pickle juice I can leave behind, actually.
Yeah, well, look, I'll try anything two or three times. I'm still so hacked off that HomebrewCon in Nashville didn't happen, because I was like, I was readying my lower intestine for hot chicken. I really was. And now I'm still obsessed with it. And I've never tried it, but I'm like, I love paprika and I love cayenne and let's go. But you know, and I can imagine that with a nice sweet tea and a pickle juice back. But now I sort of want to try
southern.
It.
Now you're southern, man.
Shit. Damn. I'm too impolite to be southern, yeah. I think. I've been in the Bay Area too long.
Yeah.
Oh, no, no. See, that's a misconception, too. I mean,
okay.
A lot of people come there and say, oh, the southerners, they were so nice. And it's just that we have a different way of saying things, you know? Yes. Like if you're down here and you do something silly and you hear them, you know, you hear us, we'll say, oh, bless his heart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're in for it. Somebody tells you that. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, bless your heart.
I got
to say, he's an idiot.
Yeah. I have a bunch of online friends in Tennessee, and that's what they say. They, you know, they go, if anybody ever tells you that and you're in and they're Southern, it's not nice. It's not a blessing.
Choose your next word correctly.
Yeah. Yeah. And end it with sir or ma'am.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's probably how you maybe can pull it back a little bit. Southern IPA. So let's go hops now. We've tackled the yeast a little bit, air quotes, and then a little bit of malt. What about hops? You said that you're targeting sort of citrusy, that, you know, like an orange citrus, but anything else you can sort of lay on?
Yeah, I mean, so it's still an IPA, you know. Mm-hmm. So of course, you know, some grapefruit, you know, but again, with the balance and the, you know, the yeast bringing to the table, you know, some fruity esters there. You're really getting like, you know, a lot of nice orange kind of citrus. I wouldn't say quite as far bitter as passion fruit like, but more, mm-hmm. you know, like a sweet citrus, you know, a sweet.
Okay.
Well, we wanted to focus too on the southern fruits, you know, the stone fruits or the oranges and the peaches in Georgia, oranges in Florida, all the way down to, you know, the key limes down in Key West. So we wanted to keep it in that category of fruit.
Okay. And then I imagine your crystal malts are sort of playing with that a little bit. You don't want anything too raisiny, like you don't want higher crystal malts because you're going to sort of get that clash, or maybe maybe that gooses the body. I don't know.
Yeah, no. So, I mean, we've played with that as well on this beer, and it really does do better, you know, without the really high crystal malts. It's, you know,
gets a little too bitter.
Yeah, we don't. You know, we try to keep it away from astringency, and you know, want to keep it pleasant. You know.
Yeah, but for sure.
Now we do like a little, you know, I guess, slight dark fruit light coming in. You know,
see, now you got me. Now you got me pulled in a little bit, because, and I'm sitting here and I'm thinking like, well, all this sort of sounds like it's 1998, and I'm having an IPA, and that's what I'm doing. Like, I don't know, I can't even remember breweries that are around back then, but the hop description is a little different. And then now you're talking like a little bit of dark fruit. Now I'm like, now I'm intrigued. Now I'm there. That's my hook right there.
Yeah.
I want to figure it out.
And it's not attenuating super far. So you're doing like a pretty warm mash, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So give it more body. Somebody's going to have to pour it in a glass so I can at least see the color.
I'm going
to
go get it. Actually, we're going to take a break. Let's take a break right now because I'm intrigued enough to now take this break to go find this beer in my fridge and pour it for everybody. And we're going to talk about it because I don't know, man. I feel like, Teresa, I don't think that we've ever really discussed a new style. Or especially
this is the first time we've come out with it here with you guys.
We got a scoop.
I think it's fun.
I love it.
I really do. I think
it's
that
fun too.
I might have to, well, unfortunately I can't taste the beer, but I might have to disagree with you that this would never fit into any other category. But I don't know. I'm excited to try it whenever I get a chance.
We're about to find out. And I feel like IPA categories are sort of exploded a bit, right, and blown out. That I don't know, on the Venn diagram of IPAs, there's some overlap with anything, but I think if you have 75% of your beer different than any other category, you can have that 25% overlap, but you can still be different. I mean, IPA at some point it's still just IPA,
right? Yeah,
but totally. you can break it apart a little bit, and it sounds like what you guys are doing.
And trying to differentiate, a little category.
Yeah.
For the South and
I, well, and you're thinking about what people in your region really like, the flavors that they enjoy and the food culture, and it's I mean, it's a whole thing. It's really cool.
I'm stoked about it, and I'll be honest with you. If I had just read about this somewhere, I'd be like, what the fuck is going on in the world that we need another IPA? But now that I'm involved in it, that's all I ever want. If you want me to buy into something, just involve me in it, and then I'm 100% on the way. So hang on, everybody. Yeah, I'm sort of joking. It's the session. We're going to be right back with the boys from Star Spangled Brewing Company, Clarksville, Tennessee. I'm about to have a Southern IPA, and you're about to listen to it. So hang on. We'll be right back.
You're tuned into The Session.
Because life's too short to listen to crappy radio.
All right, thanks for hanging around, everybody. It's The Session, Star Spangled Brewing Company. I'm going to pop the Southern IPA, but what I want to do is put Teresa on the spot a little bit because, Teresa, this is the first time I'm seeing you without your signature dreadlocks.
I know. It's so...
How you feeling? You all right?
I've been fantasizing about combing my hair out for months, and I finally just said, you know what? Like, it's actually my head. I can take them out. So
you can do whatever you want with it.
But I don't think anyone's going to recognize me anywhere I go. I'm going to see the whole Brewers Guild tomorrow. They're all coming to my brewery. We're going to have a meeting and everybody's going to lose their shit. And I mean, it's just hair. It's seriously just hair, but it's a thing. It's fine.
I think just cause like humans compartmentalize in general. So it's like, you're the girl with the dreads. That's Teresa, you know? And then suddenly you're not, and you're like, whoa, you're also like a human being too. I forgot about that.
I know. You don't have this. You have other qualities.
Right.
I'll have to try to learn what those are so we can talk.
So we can, yeah.
I don't know. It's a funny thing. It's a whole thing.
Yeah.
I'm still so relieved that they're gone, and I'm hoping that feeling will stay so I don't do it again because it's just such a pain.
How long did it take for you to get them in there?
I've had dreads for like 5 years.
Oh, man.
Wow.
And I took them out in the middle of that 5 years, and then I put them right back in because I was like, oh my God,
who am I?
Get them out.
But, now how long did it take to take them out?
Yeah.
It was like a couple weeks.
Whoa.
I had to do like little at a time because nobody has that much time in their life.
No. Well,
but now my hair is so long.
That's why I was like, whoa, what's going on? I remember Kate Porter at the Brewers Association used to have dreads years ago. And then one time I saw her homebrew con, it was NHC back then. And it was just, she had a little bob or whatever. And she cut them all off. I was like, this is weird. And it's still to this day, when I hear her name, I picture her with the dreads. I don't know why. It's just what it is. It's very like,
that's how it goes.
Yeah. Anyway, Southern IPA. Here we go. Here is the color. It's hard to see.
Oh,
with
it's
my light.
Gorgeous. Look at that.
It's like, it's very dark gold. It's not amber.
It's not a red.
It's not a red. No, it's not a brown. Here, let me try. I wonder if it's my light. I have a cool ring light, so I can do
anticipation for you to drink that.
So I can do makeup tutorials later. Hold on. Let me turn off my makeup tutorial light. Hang on. There we go. Let's see. Yeah, there we go. Look at that.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
So this is the struggle bus. What's the struggle bus about? Let's get into that a little bit while I taste this.
Yeah, the struggle bus is we just named it the struggle bus. It's a good IPA to have, a good beer to have after a long, long week on the struggle bus. So that's what we just decided to call it.
Life. Yeah. Okay.
We're riding that struggle bus. Come on by.
Come on by. We have got a beer for you. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's my jam. I'm always on the struggle bus.
Oh, I hear you.
Man, so, okay, I had my first taste of this beer, and I secretly wanted to just have it be this overblown marketing thing, right? Like, and I would never have said that, of course, but I secretly... I would never do it. But secretly, I wanted to be like, what the fuck are these guys talking about? Like, it just tastes like a fucking old IPA. It tastes like a 95 IPA, right? But it's not. It's as distinctively different in the category. This is it almost tastes like.
You're going to get some hate mail for that too.
Oh, for sure. Well, it's an IPA. But it's. And the thing about me is, you know, I don't like IPAs in general, but this is a 5.7%, which is just a touch over what I would normally want to drink. And I don't mind that. So, like, the I and the P and the A doesn't bother me so much anymore, as long as the alcohol is within a reasonable volume, which for me, I would prefer it 5, but that's not an IPA. But anyway, it almost tastes like, I'm just going to compare it because, again, like I just said, we're human beings and we compartmentalize and we categorize stuff. That's inherently how we're wired. It sort of tastes like Pizza Port, the Chronic, a little bit, but not as dark, which is a compliment because that beer rules. But the hops are definitely different. So, I don't know where to go here. I'm sort of spinning out right now. This is weird, Alan, first of all. This is a weird ass beer for a weird ass time, man. I don't even know. Let me take a sip.
That's because you've not been to the South.
That's true.
But it's a good IPA for people that like that don't like IPAs too. They'll come in and because it's very malty and citrusy.
Yeah,
at
dude.
The same time, but it doesn't. You know, I cut my teeth on Tacoma, Washington, Seattle, Washington IPAs.
Oh, okay.
It was just you couldn't breathe through your nose, because it would just burn your face.
Yeah, dude. Right. Exactly.
I didn't like IPAs until I went out there. I didn't like them while I was out there, but when I got back, I missed them.
Okay.
And So that was my home brewing days still, and this recipe is derived from that because I knew when I came back that I wanted something that was a little bit more balanced with the malt and the citrus. So this was just a work in progress. And then Alan totally came in and refined it. I mean, it's pretty good.
It is. It is. It is pretty good, man. And it's, I'm trying to figure out where to start. It's smooth and it is a little roasty, but in that higher caramel roasty, but not in that raisiny like we're talking about.
Right, right.
It is citrusy, but not in the mega orange or bright lemon or, you know, any of those other kind of like hops that you're used to, Teresa. You know what I mean? Like those like classic, well, I want citrus. I want to go this, right? It's not right. That. But sometimes when you get those beers where you have, where it's like orangey and then you have a lot of caramel malt in the back end, it ends up tasting more less like citrus and more like candied orange peel or something like that. This is not that either. It's because there's enough bitterness, I think, to kind of sweep away some of that candiness, but there's also a fuller mouth feel to sort of justify that sweetness. And it's inherently the closest thing I can say is it tastes like the Chronic from Pizza Port, again, which is a compliment because it's a very good beer, but not as roasty. If you ever had the Chronic, it can be, it's a little higher lovable on crystal malts. This is lower than that, and the hops are a little bit different. I would consider this, a new category. I really would.
Yeah, and for me, it keeps coming back to balance, you know?
Yeah.
Cause we've been all over the place with it. You know, we went higher ABV. We've went lower. We've kind of settled somewhere in the middle here. We've went, heavier body, lighter body. I even brought it down. I brought it down one time. Thin the body, brought the SRM down, and it just wasn't it, you know, it's taken us a while to, play around with all aspects of it. And like I said earlier, we've played with different yeasts, you know. I even threw, I think it was 04, I threw in it one time, and it was clean, it was great, but it really just dropped it down too low, and it thinned it out, it seemed like, too much, you know.
Yeah, I don't think that this beer would be anything with a thinner body. I mean, obviously it would be beer, but it wouldn't be as good. And for me, what gets me is that mid-palate flavor. That mid-flavor of almost an amber malt, almost like that sort of sweet, darker note to it. But then those citrusy hops come through almost immediately after. There's a little bit of biscuit, a little bit of toast in there. But it's hard to describe, man, because the biscuit and toasty, I guess, is what I get. Almost graham cracker, but not that sweet, right? That stays, and then the hops almost sort of like come in and like hoover up all the other, like, you know, the residual sugar and all the other flavors. So you're sort of left with this smooth, almost pudding-like hop character, which is a description I just came up with. But what... What hangs on, you can use it. What hangs on my palate is that crispy, biscuity, soft thing and a little bit of bitterness. And it's sort of that, for me, makes me want to take another sip because I want to fill the rest in on my palate with all the other flavors that I'm now missing because your palate just cleans them up normally, right? It's very interesting. Teresa, you got to try. I have one of these left, Teresa. I really want to hang it on. I want to hang on to it for you, but I don't know when I'll ever see you again, so I might just drink it.
Well,
I'll send some out to you, Teresa, if you send me some of the rye.
There you go. Yeah.
You really
we'll do
should.
A little beer trade. We'll circumvent your beer hoarding over there at JP.
Right. So, Alan, you were talking about you have a bunch of iterations of this beer. How many different... batches have you done of this to try to dial it in? And follow up, do you consider it dialed in now, or do you still have work to do?
So first off, I guess how many? So I came on board 1 year after you, or were you 2 I think it was 1 year, maybe two.
2 years.
Mm-hmm. So 2 years. All right. So 2 years. I've brewed it probably, I've brewed it more on the 3-barrel system, that we had, and that's where I really played with it back and forth, up and down.
Mm-hmm.
Here on the 10-barrel now, we're like 5 months into it. So, so I brewed way more often out there. I don't know how many, but I know every time that I brewed it, I was like, I'm gonna tweak this, and then next time I'm gonna tweak that back, but now I'm gonna do this. I don't know how many, probably 30 or 40 up there, I imagine.
Wow.
I mean, it's one that we try to that we keep on because it's you know
it's a performer for sure.
Yeah, it for sure gets, you know,
really?
4 days. I mean, on a in this area, 4 days on a half barrel keg, you know, a regular, you know, 15 and a half gallon keg.
Yeah.
And that was a local, you know, just one of the local restaurants here. Cause I was getting low on it. And that's why I know it was 4 days because I was low. I, I had it brewing.
I'm like, Alan, where's this beer at, brother?
Yeah.
And here's where the head brewer comes in, the scare of it, you know, you're like, it's there, it's fermenting. You're like, all right, man, I'm good. You look in the cold room, you're like, oh, I got two kegs left. That'll probably get me through. And the very next day you walk in and those two kegs are gone. Like, hey, man, what happened to those kegs? He's like, hey, I just got rid of those two kegs at these two places. This other spot over here, I think they're needing one now. I'm like, wait, what? Hold on. So we're burning a keg in like 4 days, you know.
Damn. So the local restaurants are loving it. The people buying the beer are loving it too. That's great.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's all you can ask for, really. I mean, even if Southern IPA never catches on, the fact that the people around you dig on it so much that they're just cruising through kegs in 2 or 3 days.
Yeah, we're not looking to change the BJCP or anything like that. We're just
anytime I mention this interview is going to be these guys want to change the BJCP guidelines. They want to add. I'm going to call Gordon Strong right now. I'm going to dial him in. I'm going to tell him that we got to do this.
But also, so second half of your question, it's dialed in. I feel it's dialed in.
I think so too, man. I can't imagine really changing. I don't know what you would benefit from tweaking it out a little bit.
Yeah. We went far to the left and went far to the right.
Yeah.
And we keep just bringing it back, but we had to, you know, you have to take it to those extremes, to the left or the right, in both color, palette, hops, to really realize and test the how strong your beer really is.
Yeah, I mean, you're editing, right? And like, you're editing, you know, photos or whatever. If you have any effects on those, you take your little slider and you go all the way to the left and you go all the way to the right and you see what it does.
Stop at the first filter.
Yeah. Right.
So it's the far left and the far right of the filter, and you always come back to the one you like.
That's right, exactly. Here's my Oslo. Yeah, man, it's good. And you know what? Drinking on it now, instead of had half the can now, I get some of those passion fruit flavors you were talking about, Alan, but like darker passion fruit.
Right.
If that makes any sort of sense. Maybe a little bit of like overripe guava. I don't know. Maybe I'm just imagining shit now. But it's definitely not those like super new school tropical hops that you talk about. It reminds me, the malt bill sort of reminds me more of like an overdone 90s pale ale. An overdone where it's like a little bit more roasty, right? But everything else is just very, very different. I really do think that you couldn't call this a pale ale because it's too bitter.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's the problem sometimes when brewers want to change IPA or do an old school IPA or whatever, they're really just doing a hopped up pale ale. But I don't think this is it.
And with my background being mainly BJCP, coming up as a home brewer, I'm trying to find, you know, like we fell in love with this beer and I'm trying to find a spot that it will fit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And
that's what you do.
Yeah. And that's what I was telling Josh is, man, it's West Coast like, except it's way more malty. So then I'm like, okay, what's more malty? And I'll go to an English IPA.
Well, but the hops are not right for English IPA, right?
No.
Right. Well, English can have some citrus or whatever, but there's more that the hops have that in the struggle bus. The hops have more going on than just your citrus.
Yeah, and it's too bitter for an English IPA too.
Right.
I mean, the bitterness is there. It's aggressive bitterness, so it is unwaveringly an IPA.
Right.
Right.
But there's other stuff going on.
So then I go up. I'm like, okay, well, maybe a red IPA because it's fairly dark, but it's not necessarily red. It's not, you know, and it's even more malty than the red IPA.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So no matter where I stick it, you know, I'm gonna get docked, you know, points basically from where I try to put it. You know,
yeah,
which sucks because it's an amazing IPA. Like, you know, it's phenomenal. We love it.
Yeah, it's great. I think it's good stuff, man. I'm going to finish this glass.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. In the meantime, Josh, tell me how you hooked up with Alan here as your brewer.
Yeah. So when I opened up the tap room, the first one, this is our second location now.
Okay.
On a parallel system. You know, I was brewing, managing, serving. You got to do it all yourself to begin with. And it really just Man, it killed me. It crushed me. So
sure, dude.
You hit a wall.
Oh yeah. So, yeah. But you know, I'm glad I did it, but I won't go back there again. Type thing. Yeah. So
yeah. Were there times just to jump in? Were there times when you were like, man, I just sort of missed the military. You want to go back? And the only reason I ask, because I hear that from ex-servicemen where it's like, you know, just sort of like the regimented thing where
Special Forces is a little different than the regimental. Like,
okay.
The stuff we had going on at the time in Iraq and Syria, it was all autonomous. So you had instructions. You went out and did what you had to do on your own. You weren't under orders. You know, you just had a mission you had to do. Didn't matter how you got from point A to point B, as long as it was completed and it was done correctly.
You just got to do it. Okay.
So I liked that. So I liked having that, the free reign of it. And okay. It's the same, you know, with brewing and stuff like that, like, you know, you're getting from point A to point B as efficiently as you can. And as long as you don't violate some of the rules and stuff like that, you're good to go, man. You're good to go.
For sure.
Well, at the end of the day, it's beer.
Hey, man, you know, at some point you just make your own rules and then you have this beer. That's how you ended up with. Yeah, I get that, man. I get that. All right.
But no, I think it's just, you know, a lot of people do get out and they miss the military and they miss the structure and they miss, you know, all that stuff. But really all I did was I traded one stress for another stress. So I traded, you know, lack of sleep and food and eat in combat to lack of sleep, food and eat at a business.
That's so, and taxes.
One for the other. That's right. Really all.
Yeah, and federal taxes and untapped ratings. And that's what you got to deal with now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and you know, we were saying before that some beer is considered bougie. Well, I can't think of anything less bougie than making and like managing a beer business. Like there's nothing fancy about
not sexy
what
either.
We
People
do.
Like, oh, you got
you're so weird. Hang out and drink beer all day, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Do you see the shirt I wear? I have like four stains on it. I haven't been able to buy a new shirt and they're all brewery shirts.
Exactly. I get them for free,
you know? So
yeah, exactly. You just wear the same thing over and over again. You're like, well, this is my whole closet.
You know it's gonna get dirty.
Yeah. Like Monk, like the dude, Tony Shalhoub in Monk, where it's like the whole closet, just brown blazers and the same blue shirt. There you go. That's what a brewer does. And that's the brewer's apparel. It's the Hanes Beefy Tee and a trucker hat. That's just what it is.
And a trucker hat with the brewery logo on it.
Exactly. With the sweat stain halfway up.
Yeah. Well,
you see me like this, you're going to recognize me anywhere. So.
Oh, for sure. I was like, oh,
exactly. I'll see you on the CBC.
These guys are definitely brewers. Like sometimes we'll get people on where it's like, oh, here's our marketing manager. And it's like a guy who's never been in a brewery before. But you guys are obviously
a polo shirt.
Yeah. I mean, Alan has a work shirt on for God's sakes. Like it's, you know, that's what it is. But
we had to wrap our beer in a grain bag.
That's so right. They wrapped their beer in a grain bag, Teresa. I was like, first of all,
I love it.
Like I got the box and I'm assuming it's a homebrew for Dr. Homebrew. I'm like, oh, okay, sure. Whatever. Cause it just had Josh's name on it. It didn't have the brewery on it or whatever, which, you know, it's just fine. I'm like, okay, cool. So I'm, you know, unpacking it. I cut the thing open, sealed with duct tape, by the way. You know, handyman's helper. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, Jesus, these guys packed it in a grain bag and it's just wrapped in a grain bag.
It worked.
And these 4K. Yeah. And it totally worked. And that's the thing where it's like, look, if they can transport 50 pounds of malt, they can transport 4 cans. And then, you know
yeah,
what I mean?
For sure. Like,
plastic wine. So if they exploded in transit, and at least one of them, you know, would have.
It'll be
that's
fine.
Actually a super good idea.
It'll be
all
right.
Of us, like, we should stop wasting extra plastic. We already have these brilliant bags.
Yeah, we have
no idea how many beers I get with like the ghost peanuts or these giant styrofoam shippers or all this kind of. And first of all,
I would have packed that box full of glitter.
It's right. It's the two things that irritate me most. Well, out of the millions. The two things that irritate me most are the ghost peanuts for packing and the shredded concertina paper, right?
Oh, yeah.
And it's like,
I don't mind the paper, but the peanuts,
they both get air. At least this, the styrofoam peanuts, the ghost poop, now they're made of like starch, so they're biodegradable, which is cool.
Yeah.
You can eat them technically.
Them up all over the place.
But yeah, that and the paper, they both get everywhere. Just constantly. Yeah. They're like Christmas tree needles.
Oh, yeah.
I still have some in the track of my slider, my outdoor slider, man. It's like I can't get rid of them. Anyway, I don't know what I'm talking about. So, Josh, you open. You meet Alan. Yeah, that's all right, man. This is how the show goes. We sort of just BS, so it's fine.
I mean, that's why it's great.
So. Yeah. How do you meet Alan?
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, back to I just had too much stuff on my plate, right? So it got to the point to where I had to hire some servers to help serve. I was still managing and brewing and then doing like limited self-distribution because we can do that here in Tennessee. So distributing, brewing, and then managing, opening, closing. It got a little too much for me then. So I put an ad out for a brewer and went through a couple brewers actually here because brewers aren't, they're not easy to find here in Tennessee, you know, at that time, well, heck, especially now, you know, you can probably find them in Asheville, North Carolina. You can probably find them in Nashville, but in Clarksville, Tennessee, you're not finding brewers. So I went through a couple different brewers who really churched up their resume. And then when it came down to the brass tacks, you just didn't really know, you know.
Really?
Yeah, so then Alan, a buddy of mine in the homebrew club, was like, look, man, I saw you had a job posting for a brewer. And I even put it on probrewer.com.
Okay.
And he's like, but you have to check out Alan. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Like, you know, another.
Sure.
You know, he's like, no, but he's like, Josh, hear me out. You have to check out Alan. He's right out here.
My friend makes the best homebrew. It's so good.
Yeah. So I went out and spoke with Alan, you know, he was a diesel mechanic at the time. And he was working, you know, long hours too. And I was on a 3-barrel system and we sat down and we spoke. And then I finally, you know, just from going through those other brewers, I made it kind of mandatory that you had to bring me one of your beers.
Okay.
Your homebrew beers, because right. that's the proof in the pudding right there. If you can bring me one of the beers that you made from homebrew and it's good, then, you know, we'll do this. So he came in, he was like, yeah, sure. Like, what kind do you want?
Here's my menu.
He's like, man, I got kegs and kegs and kegs at home.
Yeah.
And I said, just bring some of your beers in. No big deal.
Okay.
He brought a 6-pack of assorted beers in.
Attaboy.
They're all bottled real nice, you know, capped and everything.
Man, that's the only way to do it, Alan. That's the only way to do it. You overdo it.
I was very impressed, you know. So he went through the beers in the 6-pack, and I picked the one that I figured I would hate. Because I figured if I didn't like it, I know I don't like it, but I tasted it, we'll see how it goes from there. So okay. I picked it up, and it was a
IPA.
Mexican.
It was a jalapeno porter.
Jalapeno porter. Yeah.
Get the fuck out of here. I would have thrown that against the wall, dude. How dare you? How dare you defile porter like that? How dare you?
But, you know, I'm like, if I like it, this guy's shit hot. So I we poured it, and I drank it, and the heat wasn't overpowering, and you could tell it was still a porter, and I was like, dude, this is amazing.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, yeah, cool, because I just won, like, I got invited to the national homebrew competition on this beer, you know, and it was, talking with him, he had accolades just through homebrewing up to the national level, so.
Did he wear them all in for the interview?
No, he didn't. you would have never known. You would have never known.
Yeah, it's like a general with all the little things on, right?
Yeah.
That'd be super bougie, dude.
Wouldn't it be great? But it's almost like brewers at like JBF, you know, walking around with a medal. Which, look, I would do it too. Or like homebrewers after the awards at HomebrewCon. You have to walk around with them. But it's a different. Well, you're on a different level.
I wear the red overalls. I'm really subtle about it.
I do want to.
You're not wearing them out to the bars afterwards. You know what I'm saying? You're not wearing your medal out to the bars after. After you win GA.
I don't know, man. I've seen it. I've seen it. I don't know. But it's you are definitely very extra if you wear your homebrew medals to an interview.
Super.
Yeah. I'm just imagining him doing this. You know, looking at Alan.
And then like non-ironically being taken very, very seriously.
Or just being like,
it's like I still have this on? I didn't realize.
Yeah.
I didn't remember. I was just wearing this at home.
Yeah. My shirt's really itchy.
Yeah. trying to cosplay as Mr. T, but it's not working. So the jalapeno porter got you. That was it.
So it was delicious. And then we had to have the difficult talk about
how little you could pay him. Yeah.
And he was making decent money. And I was like, you're going to have to take a risk on me, man, because I can pay you what I can right now. But I'm not going to stop. Like, I want to be the biggest brewery in Tennessee, and then I want to be the biggest in the South.
Damn.
And you know, he went home and discussed it, thought it over, came back and gave me the green light. And then we've just been off to the races ever since. And we've grown, even since he's been here, we've grown a lot. We're in a new facility, new brewing system, and we're all learning this together now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he and I have never done this before, so we're all learning as we go.
That's crazy, man.
Awesome.
Alan, how was that for you? Because, you know, we talked to brewers who leave, you know, high-powered positions as a lawyer, as an attorney, or as a, I don't know, an economist or a designer, and then they open their brewery. But you left a job, which sounds like a very high-paying job, of course. I mean, the mechanics, you know, are nothing to sneeze at pay-wise. To be a brewer, that's stressful, man. That's got to be very stressful. What sold you on it?
It was definitely scary. You know, I'm not going to lie. I'd been doing diesel for 20 years at the time.
Wow.
And so me and the wife moved up to New Jersey for a while. That's where she's from. And up there, I landed a job teaching it, you know, to adults. And that was cool. But even still, you know, I was clean every day coming home, at least up there.
Yeah, for sure. Okay.
And when I was teaching it, you know, and still there was still just something, you know, I'd done it for so long, so I knew it, but it just still wasn't, you know, and I was home brewing. I was, you know, making wines and stuff at the time as well. And that was really when like I had a Saturday. That's what I would do on a Saturday. I wouldn't work on the old pickup that I had out back that needed to be fixed. I would, you know, so that's where I was like, you know, man, I've been doing this for so long. Just, you know, that's not fun to me anymore. What's fun is the home brewing. And then we moved back down here, you know, Tennessee, and, just the way things worked out at my shop as well. You know, I was there and, you know, in a diesel shop, man, no matter what, I don't care what anybody says, you show up to work that day, you could be in the best mood of your life. There will be something that will happen.
Triggers.
That it will test you. Yeah.
Okay. You will throw your, you know, $105 ratchet you just bought at the wall, you know, and say, I'm done, I'm through, I'm finished, you know. Damn. And then you calm down a second, you wipe the blood up off your knuckles, and then you grab it back and you go back to work because you got to do it, you know.
I feel that way opening a box of cereal, man.
Nothing like that.
First of all, number one, I want to send a reality TV crew to Alan's old shop, because that sounds like primetime TV.
It does, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Well, so it sounds like you wanted just more of an emotional break, which is a very sensitive thing for a Southern man. I feel like that's good. I'm just kidding. I don't know.
Bless his
heart. Very good. Bless you. Bless your heart.
Don't bless me. God damn. I don't know. Whatever. Well, that's cool, man. I'm glad that you, got out of a stressful job, and I'm sure this is a different kind of stress, but one that's a little bit more fun.
Yeah, it's absolutely more fun. And like I was saying, it was scary because, like I said, 20 years diesel mechanic, I knew going to work then there wasn't going to be much that I hadn't already, you know, crossed and I'd be able to handle it. And then when I, you know, spoke with Josh and I brought it home to the wife and she says, you know, this is a hobby that you're doing, right? You know, and I'm like, yeah. Yeah, I know that, you know, but also at the time I was brewing every week. So I had Sunday and Monday off from the shop. So every Monday I would brew because the kids would be at school, the wife at work. And I did that for, you know, it was about 2 years. So when you brew 5 gallon batches every week, you're sitting on quite a bit of beer.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I was in a home brew club. So we did do events and stuff, you know, and that was kind of one of the things that I took pride in as well. We would show up to events and my homebrew club would bring, like, as the club, they would bring like four, five, sometimes six different beers, you know, mm-hmm. since the kegs.
Yeah.
And I'd show up with like eight, you know.
So, you know, overdoing it.
You know, I enjoyed that, you yeah. know.
That's cool, man.
And that's what it takes, man, honestly. Just brew as often as you can. Like if you're a home brewer out there and you're thinking of trying to become pro or trying to land a job, then, and you're sitting there saying, man, I can't get hired on somewhere because I need experience, but I can't get the experience without being hired on, man, hit competitions, you know, blast out there in yeah, competitions.
When you make your name.
When you start getting awards, you know, and winning, and you're coming in with, you know, you're putting five beers in a comp and you're getting four medals, you know, three medals, even one, you know, depending on the beer, depending on the comp, you know, it's hard to win. You know, I will tell you this, it's hard to win an IPA, you know, in an IPA
bro, style. It's hard know? To win in anything. I've entered, I don't know, 10 comps. I've made it to the second round of NHC like three or four times, but it's hard as shit. And part of the problem is, there is that line between brewing for competition
yeah.
to style and then brewing what you like. So I think, you know, the challenging part, if you're going to bring your beer in, if you have a, you know, a potential employer like Josh, where it's like, well, this is a, you know, how do you explain? Like for me, I would bring in my oatmeal stout, but it's not really an oatmeal stout. It's more like a brown porter with oatmeal or whatever. So you have to like explain that a little bit, but maybe not. Maybe because Josh was a home brewer too, so he sort of understands it. But I don't know, man. What am I trying to say? You sort of get into like dangerous territory, I think, a little bit, because it's like, is this an IPA? Well, like your Southern IPA. Is it an IPA? Not yet. But it could be.
Oh yeah. Yeah,
you know, if we define things a little bit.
I'd much rather have somebody that's in home brewing and has even tried at competitions. A lot of people are too scared to even do competitions. But if you place in a competition, no matter what level it is, you know, it's showing your willingness and your drive to learn how to brew. And that's what I look for people that wanna work here, just your willingness and your drive to do better with beer. You know, and Alan is like the epitome of that in my eyes. He came in and he just keeps wanting to do better. No matter what I throw at him, I know that I'm getting the maybe, you know, the under the breath, like, damn it, Josh, again. But we keep it. We just keep going, man. It's fun.
Yeah, that's good.
When you can't teach passion. I mean, that's something that's so important.
Yeah.
We just hired a fellow here at the brewery. So I have a head brewer and two brewers, and they are amazing because they're all so passionate about what they do.
Yeah. And you know, you can feel that when you're in the room with people that are meshing with you mentally, because you just spitball and, you know, it might not all stick, but you know, you're on the same wavelength and you know, you're going to get stuff done. So we start thinking about stuff and taste and brews and stuff like that. You know, and you're just mentally there with some people, and it's good to have that.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Do you think on that level it's easier to start out with like a three barrel system or something like that, like a smaller system, because it's easier to tweak things out and to dial things in than versus a 10 barrel where it's a little more of a monetary stake in this, where like, well, if we change the hops on this, let me think about it for a little bit.
Yeah, I think you would have to have a home if you were going to start out with a 10 barrel system. Mm-hmm. It's just hindsight 2020, because I didn't, and I don't know, you know, I'm sure you'd have to have sell your soul to a bunch of investors just to get a 10 barrel system in the beginning.
Right.
But I think you would have to have, you know, a homebrew system set aside, and instead of your brewers now brewing on a 10 barrel system with tried and true recipes, now you're paying them to brew on a 5 gallon bat, or, you know, a one barrel batch, the same amount of money that you would pay them to brew on a 10 barrel system. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
I'm glad we started at a 3 barrel system, and it was a very manual system. So now if anything ever happens with the 10 barrel system, we know how to go back and fix it and change it. And then we know, you know, what kind of pipe fittings for this hose and this hose. So I think it's best to trudge through the small stuff and just be very manual, hands-on to begin with. This is just from my personal experience, because as we continue to grow, we'll always be able to relate back to homebrew 3 barrel system and then, you know, a 10 barrel system.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. All right, we're going to take a quick break, everybody. We're going to come back. I'm going to try the Winchester Bourbon Ale, and we'll talk a little bit about community, how the community in Clarksville's going, and what you guys do to sort of give back. Because I'm like I said, I'm reading through the notes here, and you know, it seems like you guys are very community involved, and I want to talk a little bit about that as well. And then we'll wrap things up. So hang on, everybody. It's The Session. We'll be right back.
Segmented, demented, fermented.
It's The Session.
Yeah. All right, welcome back, everybody. Thanks for hanging around. We're about to wrap things up, but of course, we have to crack another beer, and this is the Winchester Bourbon Ale, 8.1%. And my favorite part is the alcohol by volume is the same font size as the name of the beer. It's almost like part of the name.
Okay. I had to learn Adobe Illustrator.
Okay, that was a mistake. Okay.
I cannot afford a graphic designer right now. So it's all like Kleeb or whatever it is font. So. Yeah.
Okay, so that was a mistake.
No, that's not a mistake. It's a feature, it's not a bug.
I like it. I mean, I was like, wow, they really want you to know how much alcohol is in this beer.
He had a typewriter, and it only had the one size.
Oh, yeah, I think it is like American typewriter font. I think that's what it is.
It looks like, I wouldn't expect typewriter to be small.
One day I'll be big enough to have a graphic designer.
For sure, man.
You know, it's totally respectable that you're doing your own graphic design. I punched on that one.
Oh, yeah, I had to learn Adobe Illustrator pretty quick when I started Canon.
Illustrator's not that easy to use, man.
It's not.
It's very complicated, for sure. Yeah. I mean, you go on like Fiverr or whatever, but, you know, hey, man, keep it in-house. I love it. I said.
I got my logo.
I think it's cool.
On Fiverr with the
hop. Oh, really?
Yeah, that's the brewery's logo there. Like, I got it done on Fiverr from a guy, and I think it's great.
Yeah. No, it's a hot-looking logo, man, for sure. All right, so tell me about the Winchester. You were saying you're sort of chasing the other bourbon. Their bourbon barrel aged beer on the market.
Yeah, so we're going after. I mean, this is the beer that built the brewery for me. The Winchester Bourbon Ale is. You know, I was homebrewing this for years before I started the brewery, and when I was always do the homebrew competitions or the homebrew craft beer festivals, this was always a pretty good hit there because it's very balanced, and I do use. The staves of Kentucky bourbon barrel Kentucky bourbon barrels.
Bourbon. Okay,
so we're so close to Kentucky that I have the opportunity to go up there and actually get the barrels from Buffalo Trace or you know Maker's Mark or Bullet Bourbon and stuff like that, and then use them in beers. Mm-hmm. So we predominantly stick with Buffalo Trace. I don't know if I'm able to say that, but we use their.
Well,
we use their we use.
You think Buffalo Trace is listening?
Well, I think the TTV is maybe more of a point. I don't know.
we use the staves of the barrel to give flavor to the beer here. When I was home brewing, and I decided I want to start the brewery. Obviously, I was strapped for cash, so I would. Every time I brewed this, I put it out on Facebook that I had it brewed, and I would go for donation, of course. I would for $20 donation, I would pour growlers of it in a parking lot at a local market that I had. Yeah, so here I am. Yeah, I am.
Oh, man, that's hilarious.
I love that.
About mentioning
that's amazing.
Buffalo Trace, right?
Well, no, hey, I was home brewing, and it was by donation. You
can that's that. Right.
In Tennessee.
I feel like a lot goes. Awesome. Yeah, I love that so much.
Yeah, so here I was a retired Green Beret. I was sitting in the back of my truck waiting for people to come in, and I would just for a $20 donation.
What parking lot? Because I imagine it's either like a Wawa or a Cabela's. I don't know.
No, it was like a local. It's called HG Hill here in Tennessee. Okay. All right. So it was they have a really good craft beer selection too. Anyways.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I would just sit out there in the parking lot, and I would pour because I was kegging mm-hmm. In my garage too at the time, and I made one whole room, a cold room with a cool bot and all this other stuff. So
oh,
I
was damn, dude! You were into it. Yeah,
I was super into it.
All right.
And I would just pour, I would pour it for a donation. And then I finally saved up enough money with this beer, selling this beer in parking lots, to put a down payment in the first month on my first taproom.
Oh, man.
So
the will is the way, man. Yeah.
Save paradise, buy beer in a parking lot. That's the new Sheryl Crow song. Yeah.
That's, oh, my gosh.
First of all, that's cool. Brilliant. And kudos to you for finding a way.
You have to find a way.
Sort of like what you're saying in the last break. You get, you got to go from A to B. Doesn't matter how you get there.
Right.
You sold beer in a fucking parking lot.
That's a, that's a sweet backstory. And I want you to put that on the label somewhere, just like really small font.
Yeah.
You have to like dial that down. To,
or if you make this a small beer, you call it like parking lot or something like that. I don't know. But because I think it's really cool.
Yeah.
So you get the staves. So you get barrels and you break them down, or do these distilleries like offer this sort of?
Oh no, stave? I'm paying retail. I'm paying retail price for
paying retail. Okay.
Yeah, used barrels. We've come up with a I would say a semi-proprietary way now to do it on larger scale for the 7 and 10 barrels fermenters. Okay. So, but it was out of necessity that we came up with a way to continue to age the beer in these barrels and give it oaky vanilla flavor without the bourbon burn to it. Mm-hmm. And you can, there's no adjuncts in there at all. We're not putting vanilla extract. We're not putting smoke extract in there. Other barrel aged stuff. So this is what you're tasting is the actual barrel staves, of the bourbon barrels, Kentucky bourbon barrel.
Go ahead, Teresa.
I have questions. Of course. I always do. So is this a pretty light beer? What? I mean, it's a higher
it's an
ABV. It's kind of like a barley wine.
It's like a
it's not a barley wine, but it's like,
it's dark like amber. Yeah.
Amber.
Yeah. Let me turn my makeup tutorial.
Imperial amber, bourbon barrel.
Yeah. It's more along those lines. Yeah. It's not, I mean, light, I always get, confused when people ask light. Cause a lot of, some of my non-beer drinking friends, the Bud Light guys,
JP. That's very informative.
Thank you.
They say, hey, what's the lightest beer you got? Well, do you mean light as in sits on your stomach light, light in color, or like about light? Cause it's all different, cause dark's not a flavor,
Right.
It's a
color. Yeah.
No, but like the higher ABV, a little bit malty, like to me, that's about the color of my Doppelbock because it's a pale Doppelbock. It's not a dark one. So acceptable as like a big beer. It's just a little paler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
I was just curious. I'm trying to, as you know, I'm trying to form the flavors in my mind and the color will go into that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And again, this one here as well, it's all about balance. It's all about, like the bourbon's not, there's not too much of the bourbon flavor to where you're like, oh, wow, this is just straight bourbon that I'm drinking. And it's not, the malty. It's like, oh, well, I'm getting a malty, but I got to really look for the bourbon.
Yeah.
Again, I go back to the South. It's all I know. I apologize. It's all about balance, man.
Well, and there's
oh, sorry, JP, I'm stepping all over you.
That's fine. Go ahead. This is the delay. It happens.
So the trend, at least where I am, is toward pastry stouts that are like super adjunct heavy, very like if they're barrel aged, they're like so much and they lose drinkability. So I really appreciate beers that are like stronger, but retain that drinkability because like when you lose that, it's just like, well, you can drink that much of it, but
chocolate, strawberry, peach.
And this beer definitely has drinkability. This is, this is when you sit down and have several, you can't have too many because it is one.
Several. Look at this guy. Several 8.1% beers.
We have to start watching people at the tap room when they come up and order their second one, and you're just kind of like, this is 8%, but you can drink it like a pilsner.
That 8% is totally hidden. If you don't know what you're doing,
this can't be your first beer.
No, it can't. And so I'm drinking it out, and I love barrel aged beers. I love wood aged beers. you know, I sort of hit my stride in home brewing, doing that with like oat cubes and, you know, cocoa nibs and all this kind of stuff, and just kind of farting around with all that, all the wood characteristics, because it is just a different dimension that this stuff can give your beer. And it is an easy drinking beer. I would never have guessed it was over eight. I mean, 8.1, let's just round to eight. I would have thought, you know, high six, low seven, maybe, because there is a little hot at the end, of course, because there's 8%, right? And, you know, there is a bourbon aspect to it. But that the tannin there comes in pretty nicely and cleans up a lot of the sweetness. There is that vanilla. There is all the things that you expect out of this beer, but it's not cloying. It's not heavy in that palate, in that mid palate. And I think, Alan, the way you're building these beers, and Josh, I mean, this is your beer, you know, obviously from the jump, but the way that it's put together, you can have a lot of flavor in your mid palate and not have it be heavy. And I think that's representative in the Struggle Bus, in the Southern IPA. I think it's representative here also. They're two very, very different flavor styles, but there's a similarity in how you guys are building that sort of mid palate offering, where it doesn't sit heavy, it cleans up after itself, and I think that's very hard to do when you're designing recipes like that.
And they're easy drinking beers, and that's what, and in the South, that's what they want, easy drinking beers, because you're on the lake, you're in a tree stand, you're
working, hot all the time, is what you're saying.
You're hot all the time. So the beers here, you know, you kind of have to tailor them to that, you know, and it's a, you know, it's a blue collar working class community, just like everywhere else, and that's what they appreciate here, and that's what we brew to.
I was in the aroma, I was definitely getting like a semi sweet, or like just a cocoa nib. There's a cocoa thing, not a chocolate thing, but like a cocoa deal. And I'm imagining that's coming from the barrels.
That's all barrel.
Yeah, it is. And
in the malt.
And that's something as well. You know, it's you'd mentioned earlier wood age. I've been brewing this for, you know, for so long now, it's like I don't necessarily perceive it as wood age. It is. It's definitely wood aged. It's more I'm getting the bourbon in the beer, you know. And but with bourbon you get wood, you know. I mean, that's, you know,
By definition. Yeah. Absolutely. But I mean, that's interesting. And I wonder if it's, it wouldn't be travel order, because you're getting it right there at the source, but it's also what your palate's more tailored to, probably too. I don't know. I mean, I enjoy picking out wood, guys. And, no, but that's what I'm sort of keyed in on. I mean, I enjoy a glass of bourbon, but, you know, wood aged beers for me, I don't know. I like, I don't know. Maybe that's what I'm sort of genetically tuned to, but, I mean, it's obviously a wood aged beer, and it's very well done.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah. I like it. I had a question too. God damn it.
I have a question.
I blame the beer.
I'm looking behind you, and that's your brewery, right? Is your brewery like continuous with the tap room?
No. This is a new place that we have. We bought a 8,000 square foot warehouse that we.
Oh wow!
We put a 10 barrel brew system in, and we got a. I don't know if I can. Which am I going here?
There you go. You're panning away. There we go.
Yeah. So then we have the 20 barrel, 15, two tens, and the rest are sevens. Wow. All the way down to the stout tanks and kettle. 10 barrel brew system there behind Alan.
Oh, nice. Uh-huh. God, that's shiny. Damn.
But you're in your warehouse. So you guys have like a bigger warehouse than me, and I'm super jealous right now. No, that's awesome. So you have like all this place to grow into when you're ready.
Yeah. You know, and that's one thing I learned from the tap room I started out on, you know, space is at a premium, and even the distilleries around here, I'm good friends with a lot of the distilleries around here, and they're like, brother, space for barrel aging, for all this other, you know, barrel storage, you're going to have to buy up. So, this building was for sale for quite a while. And I think just, you know, coming in and doing a lot of the stuff ourselves, plumbing, floor drains, flooring, all that other stuff.
You got to.
Saved a lot of money. So we still have the tap room that's probably 10 miles away. Okay. I'm currently doing, I just got done doing drywall up here today to start a small tap room on in this area or on this building. But this is going to be our main production brewery, and hopefully it's large enough that we can continue to expand to be more of a presence here in Tennessee.
Oh, very cool.
It sounds like it. I mean, 8,000 square feet, that's big for a brewery, I think.
Yeah, my whole building is 5,000. My brewery is like 2,500 square feet.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
You're so packed in. Yeah, I'm super jealous right now. I'm trying to get
over it. Are you moving to Tennessee? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, jealous of space.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I feel like, moving to Tennessee, that's the way to, yeah.
No, I don't, you know, a lot of Californians right now, and I could really 100% consider myself a Californian because I grew up in Colorado. So with caveat, a lot of Californians I know are moving to Tennessee.
We know.
Tennessee, oh, yeah. Idaho. And,
I feel like
that was that. Yeah. Like,
yeah, I got the memo. They're all like,
everybody in the South is like, yep, I get it.
California. Like, okay.
California, like, I feel like the rest of the country where it's, you know, cheaper to live than California, I feel like they look at Californians like banshees, where we're just like, brah, or like flying monkeys from the Wizard of Oz, where we're just going to come and fuck your shit up. I don't care. And, but like, most of us are like, I don't know, man, I don't really like what's going on here either. But what are you going to do? Well, I don't know.
So Coloradans hate Texans 100%. They'll come to the ski resort with the big hat, and we like hate them.
No. 10-gallon hat?
Yeah.
Big 10-gallon hat.
Stop. Oh, yeah.
No, that, just no. And then, but we hate Californians almost as much. And then I went and became one, so now I'm.
Yeah. Well, now you know the best of both worlds, you know.
I do, right. And I'm sure you feel the same way. Having not grown up where you are, there's some big differences, but
there is. Yeah,
Californians in Tennessee, I just feel like, oh.
Yeah, I'm from Ohio. The first thing that I got, you know, the local people were like, you know, stigma, whatever it is, from people in the north is that you're very abrupt, very rude.
Hmm.
And I was like, oh, come on, man, whatever. So. But now that I've been down here, and you go home, or you see family, or you do see how they get that, you know.
Yeah,
I think there some stereotypes exist sort of for a reason. Culturally, like the abruptness or how people interact regionally can be valid at times. Absolutely,
I agree. Yeah, I agree.
I tell you what's funny is. I'm actually 4.5 hours drive to where I grew up, and I'll go home to visit. And my friends that I have from high school, they say, "Oh man, you talk so much different now, man. You talk like a northern man, like a Yankee, you know." And I'm like, come on, man. There's
right. No
difference. It's a four and a half hour drive, you know.
Oh, that's so funny.
That is very like regional, like England, you know, they have a lot of regional accents. Like you can tell, Northern or Southern, but you're like from the area or the county that you grew up in. You can sort of like the Irish accent, same thing. And it's
even
like
the county where I grew up in, they're like, oh, those people west of Interstate 6 are all, you know, you're like, I don't think you could ever get away from it.
That's wild, man. That shit's wild.
Be cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Getting back to the beer real fast, I sort of forgot that we're talking about this beer. You should throw a little cocoa nibs on this. I think a little chocolate would be good, man. Yeah.
I'm definitely down. Like, and this is, I actually mentioned this, that like, I really would like to do some variants on it as well, you know?
Cocoa nibs, I think your stupid jalapeno recipe. From your porter.
That might be good. Yeah, that might be good. Yeah.
Because look, I've been watching a lot of Great British Baking Show, and there's a lot of variants in that. But I feel like the sweetness is there to carry through a little bit of spice. You sort of, have you ever had like sweet and sour, like a Korean chili sauce or something, where it's sugar with chilies, but it works.
Yeah.
Something like that. I think you could, I think there's at least five variants in this.
To do variants of this. So, I mean, that's.
I think you could do it. I think the beer is a well-rounded enough recipe. You can sort of throw, you can probably do, oh God, was it on this show? I forget. Or maybe it was Homebrew Con somewhere. I feel like I had somebody send a, maybe it was Dr. Homebrew, peach flavored beer with jalapenos.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like this beer could carry that.
Yeah.
Because you do get some spiciness from the oak a little bit. There's a little sharp thing at the very, 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 very end with the tannins, right? I feel like that could pair well with any pepper, and then like a peach or an apricot or something like that could really.
Yeah, if you had peach with jalapeno, you'd probably have to have a little bit of coconut in there to round it.
Yeah, some
tasty. You could. Try it.
Yeah.
Try it.
So
I'll get 10%
about this beer. So also this beer, man, is what I'm loving about this in the area that we're in.
Yeah.
So I've used several different bourbons. Bourbon barrels on this beer.
Yeah, we've experimented with a lot of bourbon.
Yeah, barrels. Like I mean, you know, yeah, and I'm telling you. So I'll sit down and judge each one I do. I'll sit down and go through it. Now, the average guy in the tap room, he may not notice the subtleties or whatever.
No,
you know, I'm you know, there's certain ways I'm leaning on different, you know, on the different bourbons and something that we're hoping to kind of get into here is, you know, with the different barrels and what each different bourbon kind of contributes to it, you know, kind of let that lead us a bit on how we want to go. I know right now in the bourbon world, there's a lot of, you know, there's all kinds of crazy stuff going on. I mean, you got peanut butter whiskeys out there, man. They've got honey is a big thing right now in bourbons.
Sure. Okay.
I mean, I'm liking it. It's the ones that are well done, you know?
I feel like that's an easy out for people just to shit on a style. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, well, I'm just going to go back to hazy IPAs or brewed IPAs, which you guys have already said that you like, but you know, I don't care. Where it's like, oh, these are well done. Yeah. But does it need to exist?
Yeah, but what does that barrel lend to a beer after it's done, you know?
Oh.
I think that's a whole different, you know, what flavors does that honey in the bourbon barrel lend to a beer? I don't know.
Yeah.
Ferment in that barrel and then maybe some of that gets fermented out and then they keep it sweet, or do you just age it in it? And
Because fermented honey has a different flavor from actual honey.
Yeah.
I mean, you know that by mead.
Yeah.
You can taste the mead. And if you've not been told that mead is from honey, you're not necessarily going to think honey right off the bat. You know what I'm saying?
No, absolutely not.
You know, it's just a different flavor.
Right.
Know?
Well, and that's the problem when you're entering competitions with mead with inexperienced judges. And the only time I've ever entered a mead competition, I brewed it with watermelon honey, which doesn't taste like watermelon. However. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The judge dinged me because he said, you claimed watermelon honey, but I don't get any watermelon out of this. I'm like, dipshit. This is not like, anyway, I don't know why I brought this up. Yeah, interesting. I don't know, man. I feel like this is a beer, Josh, that really could carry a lot of different flavors. And it sounds like you guys are experimenting with all the fun stuff that's going on down there in the bourbon world, and you know, you're just even your different barrel makers, your tonneries, I guess is the name. That'll just have enough different impact you could experiment for years. But honey and peanut butter, I don't know, man.
Yeah,
I think it'll be good either way.
It's a
good
beer. Who knows?
Yeah, I like it. So I'm looking through my notes here, and you guys are very big on giving back to the community. What are some of the organizations that you guys support? And, you know, again, I think that's a huge part of owning a brewery, a regional brewery in a community. You want them to support you and, you know, you want to see your own community thrive. So how are you guys sort of paying it back to the people?
These days, I don't think you can own a local business and not be tied in and not try to give back to the people who are patrons at your brewery every single day, who are loyal to you. And, you know, from the get-go, we were very, well, first of all, let me say, you can't give back until you're able to give back as a business owner. So
yeah.
The brewery, they're just starting out. Don't plan on coming in hot with a bunch of,
checks, with oversized checks.
Check, 503 money, because you can't help anybody until you help yourself.
Right.
You know, so we got to a point where we were finally able to monetarily help out some local nonprofits, especially, you know, coming from a Fifth Special Forces group. We help out the Legion Fund, which is scholarships. We do the children's villages here every year for the local foster children in foster care. We provide, I mean, it's a great.
Yeah. Explain that a little bit. Cause I read a little bit about it and I started crying.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Yeah. So we requested 50 Christmas lists from children in foster care. Mm-hmm. And they range from, you know, 6 months to when they're transitioning out of foster care at 16, 17 years old. So these lists are given to us in a folder. They're numbered. We roll them up and we put bows on them and put them on a Christmas tree inside the brewery. And our patrons will come in and pull a Christmas list or two or three off the tree. Each Christmas list is under $100, but you're fulfilling a child's wish for that year. So they will then in turn go out and purchase the gifts and then bring them back by a date. And then just before Christmas, we'll take them all to the foster care facility, turn them in from Star Spangled Brewing Company and the patrons and the faces.
Wow.
Out there. I mean, the first year we filled probably one room, like a small office. Mm-hmm. The second year was about the same, but the third and the fourth year, man, they had to open up a conference room for us because people were buying bicycles. I mean, they were buying bicycles, strollers, baby beds, you know, I mean, it's great. It's great. It makes you, all the feels come in. So like, there hasn't been a time when we turned in those gifts where I haven't just been like a mess, you know, afterwards, because you feel good.
Your mascara is just running and it's, I get it.
But you're coming back and it's a great thing. It's awesome, man. It's awesome.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah, I read that and I was like, oh, I got to talk about that because that to me is, it's important, man, you know, and it's, Christmas isn't just about buying stuff, but also it's just that act that somebody cares enough to spend their money on you is cool. And not everybody gets to experience it.
Who need to feel that, you know, everybody needs to feel that, but maybe a little bit extra from some people at times. And hopefully this allows that. And it makes me feel good. It makes everybody else feel good. And to be able to do that, giving back, I think is truly one of the things that just warms you up and makes you feel better than if you were to spend money doing the same thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
A lot of it purchased more than like there'll be a list that, you know, the child says, oh, I'd like this. I'd like that. I like this. And so the list is fulfilled. And then I see a lot of other things added, you know, that the child didn't request. Cause when you see like, say a 10-year-old, you know, and they're asking for shoes for school, you know, or pants to wear, you know, I mean that, you know, if a 10-year-old's asking for, you know, pants, like a boy or something like me at 10 years old, man, I didn't care if I had ripped jeans or whatever, man, I didn't care, but I needed at least more than one pair, you know what I mean? And that's kind of where some of this is, you know, and that's where, you know, the adults were seeing this and they're saying, man, the kid's asking for, you know, these things that we take for granted, you know, and then they're throwing bicycles in there with them. And then they're, you know, so they're, that's what I like to
see. That's where like the Cribs came in and stuff like that. Cause it was a 6-month-old that just needed the foster parents just needed like Similac. They needed diapers. They needed, some 6-month-old clothes. And then the couple that got that, it showed up with an entire like carriage and a tire, you know, a bed or everything like that. So it was like, you know what they need, but they're asking just for the pertinent stuff.
Right.
But you want to go a little extra, or they want a little extra just to make them give that little, better feeling, I guess.
Yeah. Well, you know, and as a parent or a guardian of a child of that age, you need that shit. Like you can't look at a year ahead or 6 months ahead or 4 weeks ahead. It's like, I need this now. And mm-hmm. That's the only thing I can think of, but it sounds like more experienced parents or whatever. It's like, well, okay, you're going to need this and you're also going to need this. You don't need it now, but in 6 months, you're going to love me for getting you this thing. Yeah. And that's that, man, community support like that is great. And, you know, Alan, you're right, man. When I was 10, I was not focused on pants.
Right.
But the fact that a 10-year-old is asking for pants sort of gives you a window into this. No, there's a lot of issues. They need some help.
How much need is in their world, you know?
And just for a couple hours, if you can just forget that, you know, it's, I've never been in foster care, but I watch a lot of TV about it. No, I don't know. It's not, you know, it can't be easy. It can't be easy. So, you know, that's really cool. I'm stoked that you guys are doing stuff like that. I think that's great.
A little bit of that load off, especially during the holidays.
Yeah, it's, man. It's our pleasure. Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Josh, where can people find more about your brewery?
www.starspanglebrewingco.com. And then we're on the socials. We're on Instagram and Facebook as well.
Nice.
Yeah, if you have any questions or just really hate us for doing a Southern IPA, go ahead and message us on one of them. They come to my phone and my general manager's phone, and we'll respond in kind nicely. So we appreciate any feedback, and or if you want to trade beers, you know, like we'll get your address after this, Teresa, and we'll send you out some beers. If you're a brewery that wants to trade beers, we're for that too, man. So we'll go ahead and get that sent out to you.
Well, you know what I do want to do? I want to contact you guys off the air because I want to get a couple more cans of this beer for Dr. Homebrew for our BJCP show that we do. It's two Grandmaster BJCP judges and then my dumbass, you know? And because I want to get their take on it. I think this would be an entire segment.
Cool. Yeah, we'll send you a case out, man. That'd be great.
Dude, I'd love that. All right. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it very much.
Yeah, appreciate you guys
for joining. The beers were great. And, you know, look, man, to be honest with you, you guys sent two styles in, and I'm like, I don't know what the fuck we're going to talk about. This is the longest show that I've ever done with this little amount of beer.
True.
And I'm not saying that
we're
as like a...
We're on 2 hours now, right?
Yeah, we're on 2 hours. Edited down, it'll probably be an hour and a half, hour 35, you know, with the breaks and stuff. But I didn't think that we would have this much to talk about. But both of these styles were... We could still go back and forth between the two. Like, there's a lot to talk about here. They're both very, very unique and interesting beers in the space. And thank you for sending them.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah. I appreciate you having us on, reaching out to us. And if you want us to zoom in with you to answer any questions when you do.
Maybe we could do that too. Yeah,
that'd be fun. We'll just sit on the side, we field any questions, you know.
I'll email you. Yeah, that'd be cool. Teresa, thanks. I appreciate you you joining in, even though you're dreadless.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I know. We all have to get used to it, so it's better now than later.
Might as well start with me.
Yeah. Can't wait to see you in person, JP.
Yeah, me too. It'll be soon. Air quotes. Yeah. I don't know.
Ish.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know how comfortable I'll be, but we'll see. It'll be fine. All right, everybody. Thanks a lot for tuning into the session. We'll see you guys.
Cheers.
Cheers.
JP's an asshole. Justin's a nice guy and winning the race. JP does great as his charity.